Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online. This is TS Radio Network. Thank you very much. This has just been a tremendously wild week. So much going on. Been traveling again. Back home again. But we are back on the air. And, of course, things are changing faster than we can keep up with most days. We're going to be starting a series tonight with Lisa Belanger. She's out of Boston. She's an appellate attorney. As many of you know Lisa, her father, Marvin, was caught up in a guardianship. He himself, an attorney, was guardianized by his own private attorney. How you like that one? And they've been draining his estate now for about 6-7 years. And the family has been kept from visiting, from seeing, so we're all familiar with this story. We've heard it so many times, but behind all of this sits this Bar Association, who created the statutes, who avoided the Constitution, voided your constitutional rights, took you out of civil courts, put you into these tribunals that do not adhere to the Constitution, that are erected to disempower you, disenfranchise you, and leave you absolutely with no way to defend yourself from these people. Now, as I've said many times before, that person sitting on the bench who likes to make you call him or her your honor or judge is usually a ministerial clerk or a hearing examiner working for the same agencies that are coming against you. And therefore, they are not going to render any decision that will disrupt the business of the agency. As we've talked about many times, this has been set up so that it is the ultimate in identity theft. When you are guardianized, when you become a ward of the state, you suffer a statutory civil death. And that means, for all intents and purposes in the law, you are dead. If you look up civil death, if you look up the capitalization of your name in Black's Law, it signifies a dead man's estate. So when your name is in all capital letters, all this stuff about, oh, that's straw man stuff, and oh, that's conspiracy theory stuff, it's right in the law book. It signifies a dead man's estate. You have been declared dead while still breathing. Now, behind all of this, like I say, is the Bar Association. And this series we're going to be starting tonight with Lisa is going to be addressing the ultimate that many people are demanding, which is the disbarring of the Bar Associations. They pose a clear and present danger to the country. They have monopolized our judicial system. They have turned it into an insidious joke. They absolutely operate with immunity and impunity, no matter how egregious their activities are. But behind all of that is a little known thing called the American Inn. And with that, that'll be our topic for tonight. Like I say, we're going to continue. We're going to do a series on this. With that in mind, Lisa, welcome to the show.
Marty, thank you. Great to be back.
Yes, so, you've been on before. Lisa, what everybody wants to know is, what is the American Inn?
The American Inns of Court. Okay. Well, I know you started off, Marty, talking about the probate and family court.
Yes.
This extends also, though. It's wide and deep. So we're talking about state and federal. We're talking about bankruptcy, land courts, superior court, trial courts, appellate courts.
Okay.
So it really, it extends to the entire court system. So in 1989, there was a professional organization created called the American Inns of Court. That's INNS of Court. And
okay.
For those listening, they can go to my website, freemarvin.com, freemarvin.com. And there's a link to the 2015 federal RICO civil action that I filed. And then from that link, you'll see the complaint and exhibits. If you go to the complaint, my explanation of the American Inns of Court starts at page 38 through, say, 47.
Okay.
American Inns of Court is a national organization. And as I said, it began in 1989. And actually, the founder was Justice Warren.
Okay.
And so this is an umbrella for the nationwide where lawyers and judges are in an organization where it's like a fraternity.
Okay.
The important part about this association is that it's exclusive. So it's not open to every attorney.
Okay.
You need to get an invite. I don't know. After 21 years, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly how I didn't get mine. I thought I was pretty personable, but so I think my invitation got lost in the mail.
There you go. There you go.
So, and under that umbrella of the American Inns of Court, each state has local chapters, and they're by specialty. Some are, there's for patents, for as well, especially for the probate and family court, there are actually two that are established in Massachusetts. And so you have these judges and lawyers coming together in these specialties. Now, this organization, like I said, it's exclusive. So you have to know somebody or be invited and have a sponsorship by at least two members within that organization. Which, that's problematic in of itself.
Lisa, what's the purpose? What's the purpose of it?
Oh, well, okay. Here's the stated purpose. It was originated to improve ethics of the legal profession.
Oh, well, it didn't work. Go ahead.
I'm sure that they probably started out with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is this goes across the political spectrum. It really doesn't matter whether you have an R or a D as for political affiliation. It's really a one-party system. Okay? So, in fact, the American Inns of Court, as back in 2015, they had about 28,000 judges and lawyers participating in the national organization. So if you're part of these smaller organizations, you're also a part of this larger organization called the American Inns of Court.
Okay.
So these inns, again, spelled INNS, kind of like, you know, bread and breakfast, I guess. And they hold monthly meetings, generally, say, September through May. And the members, they participate in what's called, this is a quote, this is their own terminology, pupillage teamwork.
What does that mean?
Okay, pupillage team. That entails dividing the into these groups, which consists of a few members, and they informally meet outside of the formal meeting. And it allows the less experienced attorneys to become more effective advocates and counselors by learning from the more experienced attorneys and judges.
Mm-hmm. Well, what is it they're learning experience in?
It's called the fixes in. No kidding about that either. I'm serious about that. So when you take a look, and I explained in my the racketeering complaint that I filed in the Massachusetts federal court, that violates the Massachusetts judicial canon of ethics. The whole idea is that judges are supposed to be independent and be apart from the attorneys.
Right.
But in this particular organization, that's the exact opposite. And in fact, they have a section called mentoring. So they actually have a listserv, actually, where judges and the lawyers can talk amongst themselves in a group or privately. So it outright shows that there's communications that allow them to be more intimate than they should be.
Yes.
As to what they're supposed to be. When you go into court, the rules of court, they say they're supposed to, there should be no appearance of a conflict of interest, of their having a social relationship or a working relationship.
But Lisa, they're all part of these bar associations. And by virtue of the fact of the bar association, that's a union. This isn't just some trade association. This is a union. And that bar card that you're forced to carry is a union dues card. And
well, that's in addition That's in addition to it.
So how can you go into a court and expect that judge to be fair and unbiased when he's actually a part of the same union of the attorneys on either side?
Well, it seems to be a problem that I've run up against. In fact,
really?
I have made it publicly known over the past year, I am being prosecuted and persecuted by the Massachusetts Bar regulatory board called the Office of Bar Counsel, which is then the disciplinary hearings are conducted by the Board of Bar Overseers. If you don't understand that there's fox watching the hen house, right?
Yeah, it's called racketeering, yes.
Racketeering. Yeah, okay. So they are trying to, it looks as though they're trying to take away my license for saying bad things about the judges.
Oh.
Yes. So, and they specifically refer to actually my 2015 racketeering complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And so the attorneys who are part of this board of, they split it up into two sections. It's called Office of Bar Counsel. Those are the attorneys who investigate and decide to prosecute. And then the Board of Bar Overseers, they're the committee that is the tribunal, so to speak, as to the administrative hearing process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're a little perturbed that they've exposed their participation in this American Ends of Court, which goes even beyond the regulatory board itself, okay? It's
right.
True that this Board of Bar Overseers, which is where we pay dues every year, okay?
Uh-huh.
It, you're right. It is like a union.
It is a union.
Absolutely. It is. I stand corrected. You're right. It is a union.
It is a union.
Let me ask you a question, though.
Well,
let me ask you a question. Even though they're coming, even though they're trying to take my license away, but I am still in good standing, by the way. I'm still in good standing, but they're still trying to pursue these proceedings against me, and they just sent me a notice saying that my bar dues is that I owe my bar dues.
Oh.
Yes. So, you know,
I'd send them something back saying you owe me fair treatment. Am I going to get it? You know, it just
they can't understand why I don't want to, you know, take the attorneys that they want to provide to defend me. As if okay,
no, please.
But even on the registration fee, okay, they want to tack on a voluntary fee of what, $51 or $50 to go into their charity fund.
Oh.
Which I suggest is their own pockets. I'm going to be doing some research later on about that.
Yes.
Okay. But the problem is, though, exactly what goes on with this. We have separate associations in Massachusetts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you have this board of registration that makes you pay these fees. Then you have the Mass Bar Association, the Boston Bar Association, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then these other organizations that are, you know, it's just one big conglomerate. And what people really have to know is that before even stepping into the courtroom, the case has already been decided.
Right.
Depending upon the relationship between the judge and opposing counsel.
Right.
Because as you see, I'm not part of the Boys and Girls Club there.
Right.
I'm not part of this American Ends of Court. Which is even further than this bar union. I mean, that in itself needs to, as you said, that union needs to be broken up.
Yes.
But
yes,
it's even more insidious than that. And the biggest problem is that there's no accountability.
Right.
You have my case, for example. I had filed complaints of misconduct against Attorney Marsha Kazarozian, who is the attorney who how can I be so gracious about this.
Took your father hostage?
For my father.
Yes.
Yes, and still holding him, yes, still holding him hostage for 7 years. Okay. And the Board of Borough Affairs decided, or the Office of Bar Council, decided not to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I filed numerous and separate complaints for different acts, different violations from 2012 to 2015, but yet Attorney Kazarosian, who happens to be to have gone through the decades of ranks with the Mass Bar Association, and who happened to also be a part of the Board of Bar Overseers, a special hearing officer for a six-year term,
mm-hmm.
when I began being vocal, and it actually started to see the light of day, thanks to Lonnie Brennan of the Boston Broadside and Terry LaPointe of MedicalKidnap.com. Ms. Kazarosian decided to file a complaint against me.
Jeez.
And that is how that happened, that they began to begin formal proceedings against me. But you see how that is, though. Why? Because she's a member of, like you said, these bar associations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, you know, the thing is, Lisa, you know, like up here in the Midwest, Scott Walker over here in Wisconsin, and they nearly impeached him from office, came very close, and a lot of people have wondered if he did actually get impeached from office, get recalled, but they just wouldn't admit it. Like that could happen, right? And he was screaming about the unions were ruining everything. Why, it was these terrible unions, and we had to get rid of the unions. But that man never one time mentioned the Bar Association, the largest, most powerful, most lucrative union in the country. Never mentioned it. Never mentioned that they had formed a monopoly and overtaken our judicial system. Never mentioned that the Supreme Court of the United States was now its own bar association. Never mentioned it. Why don't they ever talk about the bar union? It is the biggest, yes. Like I say, most powerful, most lucrative, and they have done immeasurable damage to the country, to the general population. They have turned the law on its head. It means nothing. The law means nothing.
It's destroyed the republic.
Yes.
The very
yes.
fact of this relationship between lawyers and judges that no longer exists. Checks and balances.
Right.
It's so pervasive that the effect that lawyers and judges have on private citizens' lives, it's just unfathomable. And here's
it
the
is.
Problem. Here, there's no, as we say, we've got sham regulatory boards, okay? And then you have a handful of attorneys who might stand up and try and do the right thing. Here's a problem. If I'm the only attorney in Massachusetts that's willing to expose and try and do the right thing, it leaves little effect. I'm
right.
one person. What you need the other attorneys, but why aren't other attorneys doing it? Well, what's that always come down to? Money, right? They're always
right.
worried about their own, you know, financial outcome.
Well, that. But Lisa, it's not just that. Look what they've tried to do to you. I've seen this happen to other attorneys when you try to do the right thing. And you try to follow the law, which I know you are diligent in doing when filing cases, and you try to file and actually defend your client. these people who are part and parcel of all of this, who are in it just for the money, become extremely upset. Now, they will investigate you, but you talk about this attorney Corrosion or whatever this fool's name is, you know, being on the board of our overseers and all of this. And here this woman guardianized her own client and has been helping to drain his estate away. And you prove that in those RICO cases that you filed. Like I say, if I can read them and make sense of them. And then you had all of this information taken from public records showing a clear pattern of racketeering. Clearly showing a pattern of racketeering between these same individuals. And the judge wouldn't even, I will never forget that, couldn't read it because it was too verbose. It had too many words. And then cited you for not articulating enough what the problem was. Never once alluding to the fact that it was a RICO filing, that it was a racketeering filing.
Except the, let's see, Lawyers Weekly and I forget the other newspaper, they were able to articulate it very well in two sentences as to the racketeering charge.
Oh wow!
They were able to really succinctly paraphrase it beautifully. But here again, that isn't because it's to play along to get along.
Yeah,
there aren't enough attorneys who are willing to stand up and do the right thing.
But how many of them have we seen, Lisa? I mean, how many have we seen over these 10 years that we've been dealing with this? How many attorneys have we seen who have tried to defend their, especially in this probate system, which is absolutely one of the most insidious, disgusting things, right next to family court, got disbarred for actually trying to defend?
The problem is logistics. Look, we're spread out geographically because we don't have a unified movement. You see the problem?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is a nationwide problem.
Yes.
No doubt. I mean, that's established,
mm-hmm.
you know, hands down.
Well, and Lisa, have you seen, too, and you see it all over social media now, movements to disbar the bar, get rid of these bar associations. The general public views these bar associations as a threat, and they are. When you see these attorneys getting away with literally murder, and nobody does anything about it, for some reason,
well,
there's not going to be any...
Because... And it's because who they know, know who they're associated with. So it all come back to these associations.
Right.
And I imagine I haven't done this yet, but I would like to do a study as to the attorneys who have received disciplinary action versus those who get away with murder.
Yeah. And Lisa, another thing, you know, it's like in the years that I had my granddaughters, I was forced into family court two or three times while they tried to demand to take their DNA. The first thing the person sitting up there calling themselves a judge, who wasn't, and I refused to call him a judge. I told one judge, you can call me. He said, you'll call me judge. I said, then you can call me your majesty. And
I haven't gone that far yet. But.
Well, I'm trying, Lisa. I'm trying. And but the thing is, the first thing out of his mouth was, where's your attorney? I said, I am my own attorney. I don't need an attorney. You need to get an attorney, and then I'll need proof that attorney's been paid. I said, that's none of your business. And he said, it is my business. I said, it is not. That's a business contract between me and an individual, I said, whom I have no intentions of hiring. I said, but even if I did, whatever my arrangement is with that person is none of your business. Why would it be any of your business? Well, it turns out because the attorney he was trying to appoint to me that I refused, the bar association that he was working for, he was employed by. He was not a member of, but he was employed by them. And I've heard other people say the first thing I'm asked when I go in there is, has your attorney been paid? That's none of that judge's business.
Well, but even worse than that, people, you know, people think that, okay, if only I had enough money to get myself a decent attorney. Guess what? That's a fallacy.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how much money you pay as a client to your attorney. What people don't know is that their own attorney is messing them over.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And people really need to ask questions to their attorney as to their relationship with opposing counsel. Have they worked with opposing counsel in any way? Are they friends? Because more often than not, they are close. You know, they probably work together in some form or another. These associations,
mm-hmm.
they have social, you know, strong social ties. And the client doesn't realize the backroom deals that go on. Not,
mm-hmm.
you know, they worry about the judges. You got to worry about your attorney.
Yeah.
It's a blind faith because it's like it's like going to a mechanic for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I have to rely upon my husband because if I go to a mechanic and they tell me, you know, the water hose is gone, you think I'm going to know if the water hose has got a hole in it or not?
Right.
I really, you know, I'm only relying on blind faith as to whether that's true or not. So, unfortunately, clients are really at the mercy of their lawyer as to what their lawyers tell them are viable strategies and defenses.
Right.
They're
and
really,
you don't know what kind of deal they've struck with the opposing attorney. You have no idea because these people are not unknown to one another. That's that they're in the same union and they do talk. And too many times, like in probate and family court, you know, it becomes very apparent that, as you said, the fix was in before you ever stepped in the courtroom.
When they start asking for specific people to be appointed as guardian conservator, you know there's a problem.
Right. Right.
But for the attorneys though, also you realize again it's about the money. What happens is, in addition, their client does not get a favorable result. That usually means, you have to keep going, right? Most people want to keep going to you know, hopefully win, you know, either appeal or, you know, to do further action.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also people need to be aware of that little incentive for lawyers to for lack of a better word, I guess, sabotage their clients.
Right. Well,
because
and you
that's
know, Lisa,
how they.
Yeah. The other part of this is too, what they've done to you, the retaliation against you for daring, and most especially in light of the fact that this is your father that you're fighting for. What they have done for you for exposing this racketeering, for exposing this system that's running behind the scenes that most people are not aware of, is they've investigated you, not the people perpetrating this. They investigated you. They threatened to take your license. And one of the people threatening to do it is one of the people involved in the kidnapping of your father.
Well, and let's not forget Governor Charlie Baker, even though he was delivered the RICO complaint and CD of exhibits, let's not forget, about maybe 9 months later, he appointed Marsha Kazarian to the Supreme Judicial Court Nominating Commission.
Oh, for God's sake.
But that's not it, though. Wait. Oh, that's right. What else did he do? The attorney who was representing the conservator and guardian, that's right, Governor Charlie Faker Baker, decided to make that attorney, Thomas Barber, he's in the Middlesex probate and family court now.
Oh.
You see how that goes?
There must be a lot of money there.
Okay. Well, hey, that's been a 30-year established enterprise. Which, unfortunately, MSM, you know, mass media, refuses to shed light on that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I cannot seem to locate another attorney in Massachusetts who is willing to assist me.
Right. Exactly. And the reason is, and what I've seen happen to other attorneys who have bucked the system, in other words, the Bar Association and these judicial oversight boards and all of this, what happens is they will plant false stories about you in the media. They will do everything they can to disrupt your practice, even if it means suspending your license, if not taking it outright. And they will malign your name to no end and then say, oh, we had no choice. They were of such bad character. The bad character is the person who did this to you.
You said it best, Marty. Remember, this is character assassination.
Yes.
This is what they do.
Yes. And this is the retaliation. We see this in many federal agencies. They go after the person personally. They make up stories. They plant false media stories. The mainstream media is more than happy to put those out there, but they won't put anything out there that contradicts that. They won't put anything out there that says, wait a minute, none of this is true. They've targeted this person for standing up. And this is basically what they've done to you. I think one of the worst things I saw in this case with your father is the pictures of this Kazarian person and that Cuff, I believe is his name.
Oh, no, that
drilling
was South.
Out,
the attorney South.
Okay. Drilling out your father's safety deposit box. That is supposed to be sacrosanct. That is supposed to be untouchable.
Wait. But let's not forget that was at the Bank of New York Mellon.
Yes.
Vault.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, but guess what? That's right. Attorney Cuff, who was the court appointed guardian, he unexpectedly died on, let's see, July 21st of this year. And who did Miss Attorney Marsha Kazarian decide to say who she wanted and got put in place was Brian Bixby, attorney for BNY Mellon.
Oh.
Guardian. Okay, get that? Guardian,
yeah.
Not conservator, a guardian.
Yep. Guardian. Guardian.
Guardian.
Yeah.
Funny, the very people who started this whole thing.
Right. And now they're guardian.
But here again, I mean, but see, this is part, okay, again, it all goes to these ties of these associations.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Lisa, explain to everybody why the American Inn is unconstitutional, why it's not supposed to exist.
Well, let's say this. I would say more so, not so much as a matter of constitutional impact, but more it violates the judicial rules. I mean,
okay. It
does go to constitution as far as like due process,
right?
Because you're constitutionally supposed to have a fair a fair tribunal, a fair and unbiased, impartial trier of fact. So in that sense, it violates the Constitution, but it violates the judiciary's own code of conduct.
Well, that is such a joke. I mean, I've seen this judicial code of conduct in every state and all over the place, all the code of judicial conduct. And you can go down through that code every day of the week and find violations one after the other. That code means more to those people.
Here's the problem. Where's the accountability going to come from, right?
Exactly.
I mean, we have none. I mean, people can point to supposed commissions, but we all self-policing. How well does that work?
Self-policing never works, and that's where this has come in, and this is what is my thinking, my rationale as racketeering. This is a protection racket, and that's all that it is. Is a protection racket. It exists to protect the participating members who are going along to get along from being prosecuted for malfeasance, misfeasance, for intentionally selling out their clients, for failing to file papers in a timely manner. I mean, all this stuff, for colluding with the opposing attorney, for ex parte communication, all these things that they should, and this appearance, you know, propriety and all that. Please give me a break. The biggest crook in that courtroom is usually sitting up there on the bench. And my opinion. I'm speaking for me there. That you don't stand a chance. You do not stand a chance in a court in this country.
Well, you know, we're really hoping that justice will prevail. It's not in the courtroom, but it's going to be in the court of public opinion. When we the people, decide that we're going to change it. See, it really should be, there really needs to be some kind of citizen oversight board.
Exactly. And we suggested that here in Minnesota, and that this should not be a panel of attorneys and judges. This should be a panel of citizens, and it should be done on a lottery system so that we don't get somebody's aunt and uncle in there, you know, to make sure things go their way, or their nephew who can't get a job, and but do it on like on jury duty. You serve on the panel for so long. And one of the judges here said, he said, you couldn't possibly do that because he said, you know, people don't understand the law. And I said, really? We can read and comprehend. And I said, excuse me, from what I've seen in these courtrooms, neither can you. Because I said, I can sit in a courtroom any day of the week and just list out the number of times you violate people's rights. You misquote the law.
Definitely is not brain surgery. I'll tell you this, it is not brain surgery. And really, they insult citizens to the nth degree. It really is really, you know, I really wish I had the words for how despicable it is. But you have to understand, for instance, in Massachusetts, the reason why this particular state is so corrupt. You have to understand about the process of actually how you have judicial selection. Okay? Because it all begins with the governor. Okay? The governor, it's an appointment here. Okay?
Okay.
I would, you know, I know elections aren't, you know, that's not the, you know, perfect, but I'll tell you what. I'll take that any day over these appointments. Because what you have, how it works is you have what's called a judicial nomination commission, which consists of 21 members. And with what happens, and then you have the Mass Bar Association and the Boston Bar Association, comprising of 25 attorneys who they help the governor, you know, they have their trolling net in and, you know, getting the people they want, okay? And then after they do their political nonsense, it all comes down to what's called the Governor's Council, which consists of 8 members, and they're elected every 2 years. And so it's a majority vote to confirm the governor's nomination.
Okay.
So you understand here in Massachusetts, why it is so deeply embedded with corruption.
Yeah. Well, you know, if up here in Minnesota, they're on the ballot, right? And there'll be at any given time 10 judgeships open. There's 2 names I've seen at one time, because I vote every time I'm supposed to. Like it matters. I do it like it matters. I know it doesn't. But it'll say
You wouldn't be able to, but then, see, as long as you do it, you get to be able to bitch about it, right?
Exactly. Well, the other thing is, it's like there's 2 people, say, for like the Supreme Court in the state of Minnesota. Let's say there's 2 people listed for an open position there. Well, one of those people already has it. One of those 2 people is going to get it. And then, so you voting or not voting makes no difference, because they've already got the job. Now, we also on our ballots have a line underneath that that says other. I always write me in. And twice I have gotten 3 votes, and I want to know who those other 2 people were, because I voted for myself. And but anyway, this is what I'm saying. It's a rigged system, because these people are not forced to campaign. They're not forced to publicly admit how they adjudicated cases, how they handled them. One of the things I find truly offensive in the court system in this country is that you'll have a jury trial or trial by jury, where you actually seat a panel of jurors, and they will render a verdict, and the judge claims now to have the power to set that verdict aside because it wasn't what he wanted. He has no power to do that. He has no authority whatsoever to set aside that jury's verdict. And they do it all the time. Then they cite other cases where they did it and say, well, because they did it before, we can do it again. No.
Well, it's not even worse to realize. Now they just do motions to dismiss. They don't even do impairment of juries now.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And that's the other thing, the right of a trial by jury. And Lisa, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was told by an attorney here some years ago, it's all in the language. If you ask for a jury trial, you're asking that judge to be the sole determiner of that case. If you ask for a trial by jury, now you're demanding the empanelment of your peers and an actual jury to be selected and seated. And he said, but most people don't understand this, so they say, I want a jury trial, and you end up with just a judge and no jury. And he said, you have to understand the semantics. Yeah.
Well, in Massachusetts, I'm not sure that's the same in terms of, you know, as long as you say you want a jury trial. What happens is, usually, well, the problem that comes into it is that the lawyer will convince their client that they happen to know the judge and you know, they'll vouch for the judge and they'll convince their client to go for what's called a bench trial.
Yes.
Right.
A bench trial.
And so, and so they will waive their right to jury trial often on that.
No.
Based on, you know, vouching for what the judge is known for, if they appeared before this judge how many times, and so forth. And I'd be rich if I was given a nickel for every time I've heard someone a client say that their attorney said they couldn't put forth a certain valid argument because they didn't want to make the judge angry.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
That's really, you know, that is so dishonest right there, and intellectually so dishonest.
Yes.
They are purposely waiving their client's rights to appeal in any way whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
They really cut the client's knees off at the kneecap.
Yep. I'm getting a lot of messages here that people can't get on the phone board. It is full. I'm sorry. We've got a full board, 50 callers listening by phone. And you can still listen via your phone. You don't have to be on the board. You're still, you know, able to tune into the show. You're just not showing on the board. And but I wanted to let you know that. And Lisa, what really, really bothers me about all of this is that, like I say, there is this growing movement across the country. People want rid of these bar associations. They are so tired of this crap. I mean, the biggest crooks you'll run into in most cases, the shrewdest, most cunning, insidious people you will meet are attorneys, and they'll screw you in a heartbeat. And
well, you know what they say. If you're on the road, right? And you see a dead skunk and mm-hmm. a dead lawyer, and you know how you know the difference, right?
No.
Okay. So the skunk, dead skunk, they're tire tracks, skid marks.
Shut up.
There it is, you know. Can you blame them? But,
yeah.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Think about this, okay? The state and federal legislators. I don't know the exact percentage, but it's very overwhelming as to the number of legislators that are attorneys.
Right. Yep.
And that's the problem. That's a huge problem. You see, with the checks and balances, there are no checks and balances then.
There wasn't there originally an amendment to the Constitution that a lawyer could not.
Oh, that's my favorite topic. I want to write an article about that too.
Okay.
Yes, the original 13th Amendment that was ratified in 1819.
Okay.
And that actually said that lawyers were not allowed to run for public office.
That is rather prophetic, wasn't it?
Well, but listen, but what happened though? Oh, but it went missing.
Mm-hmm.
They, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You see how that happened?
Yeah.
It disappeared from, you know, the original 13th Amendment somehow went poof.
Yep. Yep.
And it wasn't until much later that they discovered the original. But it all goes back to where they were concerned. It was about their disdain and distrust of nobility.
Right.
Going back
right.
to the colonial times, you know, about the abuses and excesses.
Yes.
And against the whites.
Right.
And so it they definitely had a lot of foresight, didn't they?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well,
amazing how, you know, that really nothing really changed much, did it?
No.
And I suggest that's what needs to happen now, even though the argument is that because that was the original 13th Amendment and it was ratified, that it actually exists.
Right.
I think that actually that there needs to be further amendment with the Convention of States.
Right. And that's still moving right along.
This is something that can really get things going back to hopefully some sense of justice, is to get the lawyers out of the political process.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And I think a large part of the country agrees with you, Lisa. Like I say, I'm seeing this disbar the bar. I'm telling you, people now consider it. Yeah, now people now consider it, and quite honestly, from what I read many places, the biggest threat to our republic is these bar associations and these lawyers.
That's right. I have no problem no longer being, quote, a member of the bar. I haven't made money from it anyway. So therefore, it's a matter of moral compass. And I'm really hoping to get some public momentum behind me, because these are avenues that definitely can be pursued.
Exactly.
And I'm really hoping that the public really will get together.
It's growing. It's a growing movement. People are so sick of this bunch and this organization across the country. I don't see how it can survive much longer. I truly don't. Because the disgust with the corruption within these bar associations and the judicial system has reached a point where I don't think people can take much more. I really don't. Lisa, we're down to just a few minutes.
Everybody's got skin in this game. They just don't necessarily realize
it.
At this particular point in time. They need to have a little foresight that it's not a matter of if, it's when.
When. We're down to the last couple minutes. Lisa, I want to thank you for coming on. And everybody, we will be doing more shows with Lisa. We're going to be talking about different aspects of this whole thing. We've got a lot of topics to cover within this subject that affect all of us in many, many ways. I want everybody to remember these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, taking place at the end of July every year in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we will be there, have our panel there. And please support these shows and any other shows out there that are fighting for your rights and people willing to speak up. There's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of organizations out there, groups forming. Out there, find one that's actually working together as a group. If it's being led by someone talking about, I did this and I did that, get away from them. Look for those we people, and not the ones who pretend to be a unity we people, but an actual unified coalition working. And for everybody, like I say, we've got a lot of people in the judicial accountability movement with Brian Kinter. There are so many things going on and so many families under the gun from these bogus so-called courts and the legal system, which has become a joke in this country, is just unfathomable. So get in there, get involved, put your voice in there, express your opinions. You don't have to agree with everybody, but if you disagree, do it respectfully. You don't have to get in there and cuss and swear and say stupid things. With that, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I'm sorry everybody couldn't get on the board, but like I say, you can always listen by phone. The shows are always available in archive, so you can listen at any time you choose and listen as many times as you want to. Lisa, again, thank you for coming on, and we will be having you back probably in a couple of weeks here, and we'll pick this up where we left off.
I appreciate it, Marty.
You bet. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we'll be back. You know we will. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.